Bandwidth for Inside the Net is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Inside the Net with Amber MacArthur, episode 30, for August 2nd, 2006. David Heinemeier Hansen, creator of Ruby on Rails. It's time for Inside the Net, and we apologize for being a little late. In fact, we're actually pretty late because we didn't do one last week. Took a week off while I was in Toronto. Ironically, it's harder to do Inside the Net when I'm in town.
I know. It really doesn't make any sense. Technology's not helping us out that way, Leo.
Well, we've got a new way of doing it, and you're going to start hearing those soon. We're going to do special versions of Inside the Net from Toronto, from the Drake Hotel.
I know. I can't wait to go there. We're going to interview anyone really who's in the tech industry who's in Toronto and has something to say about an interesting company that they've started or interesting technology. And I think the first one we're going to do is all set up for the end of August.
Yeah, I'm excited. We actually have, I think, two already booked. There's so much stuff going on in Toronto. And in fact, once we get settled in, I think we'll allow people to come and if they should want to watch us do the taping and so forth. And you know, there's just a great community of Web 2.0 people in Toronto, so it's fun to kind of do it live. So that'll
solve
that
problem. It's going to be awesome. Anyway, that'll solve that problem.
Yeah,
we're back, though.
We're back. We apologize. So this week, we don't normally get this geeky.
We normally don't, but we are getting this geeky this week. And yeah.
It's in honor of a birthday.
It's an honor of a birthday. I think it's the second birthday of Ruby on Rails.
Yeah, the 24th of July, 2004. Ruby on Rails came out, and many of the Web 2.0 sites you see are built on Ruby on Rails. One of the reasons is it's very easy to have an idea and implement it quickly and then iterate through changes as you get feedback from users and so forth. So you can, in a mere month or two, get a very good, reliable, robust site up. So that's, and I think that's in many ways why we're seeing so many new, exciting ideas out there.
It really is, and we're lucky today to have David Heinemeier Hansen, who's going to talk to us. We've been kind of tracking him down across the country.
So before we begin, just one little program note. We were having a little trouble with Skype on that day, and the first time I called David, we got him basically through via the cell phone. So about halfway through the podcast, we started over. I got Amber in. We couldn't get Amber in the beginning. And she joined us, and then David's microphone quality, you'll notice, will change a little bit as he went from cell phone to laptop. So just to explain, it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, where you go from black and white to color right in the middle of the interview. I start off, of course, by wishing him happy birthday on the second anniversary of Ruby on Rails.
Yeah, thank you. That's pretty exciting to see how far we've come.
I mean, in terms of a framework, it's pretty young, but boy, you have come a long way. Does it seem like a long time since it was introduced, or a short time?
It definitely seems like I've been doing Ruby in some aspect forever. I started doing Ruby about a year in advance of releasing Rails. So I've been doing Ruby now for about 3 years, and that definitely feels like I've been doing Ruby forever. But that might just partly be because I'm trying to forget whatever I was doing before. And just because I enjoyed this so much more than I've ever enjoyed programming in the past.
Right.
So it naturally fills more of my mental space.
Why did you switch to Ruby, just out of curiosity?
Sure. Predominantly just because I wasn't happy with what I was doing.
What were you using before?
I was using predominantly PHP, and I had worked in a Java shop as well, so I've been fairly exposed to the Java world as well through the education. I was going through Java with the major language there as well. And I've, in some aspects, definitely liked PHP more for just getting web stuff done, but I also certainly appreciated a lot of aspects around Java, but working, actually doing programming in either environment was just not an incredibly appealing experience. It was just something I had to do to get programs out in the end.
Right.
And I found that that's not a very satisfying way of working. If you only can enjoy the product of your work, not the progress or the process of it, it's not very fulfilling. You need to be able to enjoy the act of work, not just the result of work. And that's what led me to start looking around for something else after finally being... After finally perhaps realizing that fact, that neither PHP nor Java was making me happy in the process of work. So I started looking around, and I started reading that Dave Thomas and Andy Honda, Pragmatic Programmers, and Martin Fowler, and a few others in the communities who were seen as thought leaders or what have you, were talking about this language called Ruby, and they were talking about it in ways of saying, well, we usually have to use Java or C# or whatever else is out there for our day jobs, but now I'm writing this article, and I'm free to choose, let me explain the concepts I'm trying to illuminate in Ruby. So I thought, if all of these terribly smart people would really rather use Ruby if they could choose, why would I not use Ruby when now I have the choice to choose whatever language I wanted to? And that came up because I started learning Ruby for a reason. I never really learned programming languages just for the fun of it. I don't sit down on weekends and read up on Haskell. That's just not how I'm wired. I need to have a specific task at hand to become interested. And the specific task I had at hand was building Basecamp. We had Thursday and SQL started to think about that we wanted to build this Basecamp application. And that was the jumping point for me, where I had an excuse to start looking for something else that would make me more happy. And I also had a reason to dig into a new programming language. So those two factors combined, and the flash of inspiration from the Pragmatic Programmers and from Martin Fowler and from others, led me to Ruby. And it didn't take very long for me to realize that Ruby was exactly what I had been looking for. It was that magical glove that just fit my brain perfectly.
People do say that about Ruby, that it's a very expressive language, that they can really talk
about. It's
very
expressive, and it's very, it just fits the way the brain flows for a lot of people, and especially for me. Where in lots of other languages, I would have this intermediary translation process of, this is what I want to do, and now how do I get it working in the programming language. For me, that distance in Ruby is so much lower. When you're programming, it's almost possible to think in Ruby for the task at hand. And I found that was rarely the case in any other platform or language I'd tried before. I'd always had this intermediary translation process, and that was oftentimes a painful part of it. Where in Ruby, that's the joyful part. It's the part of writing code that reads fantastically and just, well, looks beautiful. And that's definitely one of the key concepts in why we rave so much about Ruby and working with Rails, is because it allows for beautiful code. It allows for code that's extremely easy to read, takes very little effort to write, and in the end, the result is just, it's beautiful code. You can look at a piece of code and appreciate, whoa, this looks really great. And there's just very few languages and platforms that allow you to get that feeling.
But yet, as a young language, it was only 10 years old, it probably doesn't have the kind of library support that, say, a Perl does.
Well, the fact is that young is very relative. For example, Ruby is older than Java, and I don't think most people are labeling Java a young language. So from a pure age perspective, Ruby's actually pretty old. It's from 93.
Yeah.
So... And which is about the same. It's a little bit younger than Python, but not by much. So in that sense, and certainly it's much older than something like C#. But it's definitely true that it has not had for a long time the awareness that other languages like Java, who had a blitz of awareness coming off a major marketing push from Sun, had from the start. So Ruby has had to earn that kind of interest.
Well, of
course, I think that's actually more exciting, that it's been earning the interest of programmers, not by being pushed by some big corporation. It's now gaining very rapidly adoption simply because programmers themselves are terribly excited about it.
I have Amber Mack in here now as well.
Hi, David.
Hi, Amber.
So, Amber, just to catch you up, David and I were talking about Ruby and how he first started using Ruby, and why he chose Ruby and the expressiveness of the language and so forth. And was Basecamp the first project? In other words, you started a new project and a new language at the same time, David?
I did. I basically started three things at the same time. I started learning Ruby, I started building Basecamp, and in a sense, I also started building Rails.
Did you know you were building a framework at the time, though? I mean,
oh, definitely not. Definitely not. My first intentions was certainly just to build the best Basecamp I could. And as part of that process, I started realizing I was building a lot of generic tools that other web applications could use. And perhaps halfway through, I realized that, hey, this toolbox I've been building now is actually pretty sufficient. I'm getting a lot of work done, and I'm enjoying the work I'm doing. Perhaps others could benefit from what I'm doing as well. And then I started perhaps having a more conscious thought that I could release this someday.
And how much do you think it really helped you to speed up Basecamp in terms of the development?
Oh, massively. And actually, there's a lot of technical reasons for why it would speed up the development of Basecamp. But what I've enjoyed the most was the human aspects. There's a wonderful quote by Scott McConnell where he says that through all the research that's been done on productivity, there's one factor that's been shown to have a larger impact than any other, and that factor is motivation. So what I really unleashed with Ruby was the power of motivation, that I thoroughly enjoyed the programming work I was doing with Ruby, and that just made me a vastly more motivated programmer, and thus I got a ton more work done simply because I really liked the programming part of what I was doing. But of course, all of this motivation comes from the fact that Ruby is just inherently an incredibly productive language, and that's part of why you become so motivated working with it, because you can get a lot of results done in very little time.
Well, I think also the reason people use Rails so often for Web 2.0 applications is that the iterative process is so simple and quick, and it's so easy to incorporate feedback from your users.
Definitely. The fact that we don't have build cycles in the same way that a lot of the mainstream languages do, that we can change anything anywhere in the application, reload our browser, and then we can see the result of it, really leads to a faster cycle. And that's been one of the major learnings that I took away from something like PHP, that lowering the feedback between changing something and seeing the result of that change is just incredibly important.
It's almost like a conversation with your user as you're programming.
Yeah, in a lot of senses it is. And I have actually been doing a fair share of programming while talking to somebody else, like talking to Jason or Ryan, with the designers at 37 Signals, about what we were doing. And I'd say, let's try this, let's try that. And we would change the code and we would see how it worked. And that only worked because it was so quick to make those changes. They wouldn't have stuck around. I could have said, sure, let me change that. It's going to be 15 minutes. That wouldn't work in a conversation. You can't have a 15-minute pause. pause in what you're talking about and still sustain a reasonable conversation. So, that is definitely a big factor.
How long did it take you from start to finish to build out Basecamp?
I think I calculated it as being 2.5 man months, because at the time I was actually not an employee or directly associated with their disciplines. I was working at a contractor, so I was actually tracking my hours. So that's why this Basecamp is the only project I have a fairly reasonable assessment of how long I've spent on it. So about 2.5 man months.
That's kind of stunning. That's an order of magnitude less than a project of that size would normally be. I mean, that's significant.
It was definitely fast, and I definitely realized that when I was summing up the hours and the end of it and was going to send 37 signals to Bill for that. they got up pretty cheap here. And the end application was about 4,000 lines of code. And that doesn't necessarily mean too much for somebody who's not programming all the time, but for comparison, one of the Rails guys was noting he was working at a bank, and he said they have XML files, configuration files, that are longer than Basecamp.
Yeah, yeah. And that doesn't mean it's a simple program. It means that Rails does so much for you.
It definitely also means that Basecamp is a simple program. We made a lot of choices explicitly to keep it simple. But still, even with all of those choices, doing it in 2.5 man months and 4,000 lines of code was definitely a big thing.
So why did you decide to join 37 Signals after you were working on contract for them?
I realized that I just really, really liked working with Jason and Ryan and the rest of the team. And I really liked the problem domain. I really liked Basecamp itself and the notion of making more applications like that. So it was pretty natural for me that I'd rather work on products than just doing a vast number of individual consulting projects. They can definitely be fun, but oftentimes you have to deal with customers in a way where they have an undue amount of influence over the work. The great thing about working on products is that you can aggregate all the feedback coming back from customers. You're not obligated to follow any one person's ultimate list of demands for your application, which is definitely the case with consulting. You have to do whatever your client says, and you can make recommendations and so on and so forth, but that doesn't mean they will carry through. Whereas when you're working on a product, you're free to make the best decisions and the best choices you see fit on an aggregate of information. That's just, for me at least, a lot more fulfilling.
So after Basecamp, then I think you worked on Ta-Da List as well, which is another web application for managing lists.
Yes.
How long did it take you to put that together? Because it's a lot simpler of an application, but in terms of man days, if that's how we're measuring things.
It took very short. It's like a week and a half or 2 weeks or something
Wow.
like that. Of course, there went a little bit more work into it from the design side and just figuring out how could we make the simplest possible to-do list online. And that process probably took a little bit longer. All the statements I'm making here, including the 2.5 man months, was my time. It was not including whatever time Jason and the other designers spent on designing the thing.
And what other web applications out there are using Rails? Just as examples for other people, I'm sure they've seen some of 37 Signals stuff, but there are lots of other websites and apps that are using Rails and developing great products as well.
Definitely. One of the examples I keep pulling forth is the Robot Co-op, a small team in Seattle that's done 43things.com, 43 places, and 43 people. And all of these applications are about tracking things you want to do. So 43things.com are about tracking the goals you want to fulfill in life, which I found to be a very inspiring notion that they want to help humanity move forward by fulfilling their goals. That's been a massively successful application. I think they have 400,000 people who are tracking the goals they have in life. So I like that one a lot. Since we're on a podcast here, Odeo.com, one of the big podcast portals, is built entirely in Rails. There's e-commerce shopping with Shopify.com that's actually made from one of the other core Rails contributors, which is very cool. If you need to make your own shop for selling something online, they've made it incredibly easy, and they're using Ruby on Rails. What a good example. Oh, A List Apart, one of the major leading web magazines, is done in Rails. From one of the same guys that did that, there's something called Corked, which is a wine site for rating wines.
Oh, I really love that site. Yeah.
That's a beautiful site.
Yeah.
It's really well designed. And,
is that
and
the
nice
one Dan Cederholm worked on?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of applications, and on RubyOnRails.org we have a long list of additional applications that people have made with Rails, and obviously there's tons new coming out all the time.
Well, you know, I mean, there are a lot of other frameworks, there are a lot of other languages. What is it, do you think, you're probably the wrong person to ask, but what is it that attracts people, what do they tell you attracts people to Ruby on Rails?
The same thing that attracted me to working with Ruby, actually, that they start enjoying their work more, that Ruby is getting less in the way of the way they're working, and it's fitting their brain better. They're writing beautiful code, and they're appreciating that that's actually possible. For a lot of programmers, that seems like a willy-nilly notion that you should care about something as, in some ways, I don't know, feminine as beauty in code. But that's actually what most of the people I've been hearing from really, really like. They like creating beautiful pieces of beautiful programs. And having a language that actively and consciously support that is just incredibly important.
And how do you think Rails is really changing the nature of some of the websites and web applications that are available today on the internet compared to, say, 5 years ago?
Sure. Most importantly, that it drastically lowers the cost of creating a new application, which means that creating a expansive or interesting web application is no longer the domain of 20 people teams. You can have smaller, much, much smaller teams, one or two people, just working nights and then still coming up with something incredibly nice and useful. The Corked.com that we were just talking about was just something those guys did in their spare time. And actually, even the same thing happened with Basecamp. We didn't take 3 months off to work on Basecamp exclusively. I was going to school. I was still doing other consulting work, and 37 sequels had clients to manage. We simply didn't have the hours in the day to slug through a mainstream platform or mainstream language, because they're simply not productive enough to allow for that kind of work. So I think it's changing just who can start making web applications, how much do they need to invest to get something useful up and running. And when you change those two parameters, you just wide open the game to a lot of new interesting ideas that wouldn't have seen the light of day otherwise, because they would have to have gone through committees and assigned huge budgets and have a year to complete.
I think that's why Amber and I think of Ruby on Rails as almost the fuel that's powering the Web 2.0 explosion right now. It just makes it so easy for you to have an idea and then express it.
Right, that's definitely one of the key goals that we're going after, that you can think something up and then you can just try it out. Does it work? If it does, great, do more on it, and otherwise throw it out. And you don't have to be throwing out 3 months of work then. You're just throwing out a little bit. And that just leads to massive experimentation, and it leads to changing software development in some interesting ways. When developing software is very cheap, when changing software is very cheap, there's a lot of the traditional factors that just becomes less important, like documentation or having huge teams where you need very sophisticated project management to make it work. You can more just try something out, see what happens, and then change from there.
Do you recommend, obviously, the Pragmatic Programmer's books on Rails as the best way to get started?
Yeah, I definitely think that the Agile Web Development with Rails book is an excellent way of getting into Rails. It takes you through the entire process of creating a small e-commerce application and thereby showing what most programs need to get off the ground. Even if you're not building a shop, you can take all the lessons and apply them to your domain. And once you've done that, there's the Rails Recipes book, which is great for just, I have something I want to do. Somebody else probably made it before me and wrote it down. There's a good chance that whatever you want to do is in the Rails Recipe book. It has, I think, almost 100 or 60, I forget, recipes on various things that you would want to do. Hey, I want to do an Ajax search box where I get ahead results just by typing. Let's see if somebody else did that, and the Rails Recipe book will have an instruction on that. And then I also like the Ruby for Rails book, which is for people who've found an interest in Rails but didn't come from a Ruby background and they want to know a little bit more about Ruby and the language powering Rails. So those three books are definitely on the my high list of what I would recommend.
I think you'd... I'm sorry, go ahead, Amir.
It's okay. What do you think is going to happen to some development and design companies out there who are producing applications but haven't, you know, started using something like Ruby on Rails and they still have long development times? Are they going to face some major challenges in your mind?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think that we're entering an uptake now of Ruby on Rails and similar environments. There are other environments in other languages that provide some of the same features that put a lot of stress on the mainstream languages and shop choosing those languages, that it's certainly a competitive advantage using something that makes you more productive and requires less teams and requires smaller budgets.
Things like Symfony or Django or...
Right, those are other alternatives of frameworks done in the same kind of spirit as Ruby on Rails has done it.
You did a lot to jumpstart Ruby on Rails, too, with a screencast. Was that your idea? Because that's inspired. I mean, I think probably more people picked up Ruby on Rails because they watched you write a blog in Ruby on Rails in 15 minutes than anything else.
I totally agree. It's movies have been vastly underrated for communicating technical information. And I did it because I like that myself. I like myself not to have to slug through 50 pages of tutorial on how to get up and running with something, writing Hello World. That's just not interesting to me because I don't know at that point whether I'd even be willing to invest that kind of time. Is this even interesting for me to spend any time on? What a screencast like the one we had for Ruby on Rails does is that it allows people to just lean back. You almost have to do nothing, and then you get a very precise taste of what it'll feel like to develop in this on this platform. And once you've gotten that interest, once you've gotten passion saying, whoa, this is actually pretty interesting, you're way more likely to say, okay, now I'm going to read those 50 pages on how to get started or whatever else I have to go through or pick up the book or something else. So it's a hook. And it's a hook for you to get excited enough that you will actually want to play with it. If we didn't have that hook, if we just had the books and if we just had the tutorials, just a lot of people would have a very easy time saying, I'm going to look at it next week.
Well, I think it also got a lot of people using TextMate. You were involved in the development of TextMate. In fact, it's really kind of the ideal Ruby on Rails companion.
Certainly.
Alan gives you a lot of credit for it, hanging in there with him.
Yeah, it was definitely a very interesting time. When I first came to the Mac, the number one thing that gave me kind of hesitations of switching was the fact that there was no good text editor. There was BBEdit, and BBEdit was probably fine for people who've been used to OS 9 and other Macs before that, but I was switching to the Mac because of OS 10, and BBEdit just felt, well, wrong to me. And it's not just BBEdit, but Project Builder and all of the other tools out there, they were just not up to the standard I was used to from Windows, where I'd been using UltraEdit and other editors there. So I was very much acting in my own self-interest when I got involved with the TextMate project and helped Alan just get the ideas a little bit in order and structure in such a way that TextMate could actually have become released. And then, of course, once it was released, I was just very happy working with it. Yeah. TextMate is something that just fits my hand just as well as Ruby fits my brain. So I was very enthusiastic about pushing it out there and helping people realize that there is now, in my mind, worthy... the missing text editor was actually what we called it on the launch of it. The missing text editor for people switching over to the Mac.
Do you use your or have you looked at RadRails or any of these? Yeah.
And I think they're cool projects, and other people like more of that kind of style. They're used to Eclipse from doing Java work or something else like that.
Right.
It's not something for me personal. I mean,
you like a text editor.
Yeah, I like a text editor. It's not to say that I don't appreciate the things that you can get with an IDE. I think IntelliJ, especially for Java, and in some ways also Visual Studio for C#, have shown that you can definitely do some very nice things when you start focusing explicitly just on a single language and building something up around that. But the kind of language that Ruby is just... lowers the necessity of having an IDE. It's just when you only have to write 1,000 lines instead of 10,000 lines, then it's just not as necessary to have an IDE to assist you. It's certainly still nice, and I would certainly still like if we had something like IntelliJ for Ruby, but it's just not necessary on the same scale. And that means that a general-purpose text editor that you can suit to your own language, like we've done with TextMate and all the Ruby on Rails plugins for it, can become extremely powerful.
With all the attention you've been getting in Wired Magazine and Linux, and I think I also saw you in Business 2.0, are you still doing any programming?
Oh, I am, definitely. I shouldn't say, I've just been on vacation for almost, for a European amount of time. So I haven't been programming
for the last... What is that,
a month? Actually, yeah, something like that. First I went to Japan for 2 weeks, and I would just come back from a road trip of 3 weeks. So definitely very un-American vacation times. But no, I definitely program a lot. And I'm working on our latest application at 30x SQL, which is something we call Sunrise, which is our next major application we're pushing out. And I'm doing the bulk of the programming on that one. So I still very much enjoy programming in Ruby on Rails, and I do it a lot. I still also work a ton on the Ruby on Rails framework itself. So that's one thing I want to make absolutely sure that I always have the time for. That's one of the reasons also why we've consciously chosen to keep 30x7 Signals a small company. When you have 7 people, it's pretty manageable to have people figure out what they need to do, and you chat a little bit about it during the day, but you don't have to have the explicit manager role where somebody does nothing else all their day but managing. Where if you have a 50-person company, that's a lot harder for whoever's in quote-unquote charge to still do the work. That's not a very compatible notion. And both Jason and me still very much enjoys doing the actual work. We're not in any rush at all to get out of that.
When you're talking about man months, how long is an actual man month?
Oh, unrealistic amounts. 8 hours a day. So that's just for comparison. But yeah, in reality, that doesn't fit very well. Most people don't work 8 hours a day. And managers who estimate shipping dates on top of 8 hour a day work weeks are delusional. I think that most people are probably happy if they get 4 or 5 productive hours out of the day, and I think that's even setting it high. It definitely helps getting more productive hours out of the day if you work in a small company that doesn't have meetings all the time or stuff like that to interrupt you. But still, you very, very rarely get 8 productive hours out of a day. So man months should just be taken as a way of comparison how many hours was invested in something, not for scheduling when something is going to be launched and not for assuming that somebody will work 8 hours a day.
I was just curious if you're pulling all-nighters to make it through those 2.5 months, because that's a pretty fast time to develop a web app.
The 2.5 man months was spread over a longer period of time because I was actually only working 10 hours a week. And that was one of the very strong constraints we had on the Basecamp development, that we had very little development time, really. So we had to make pretty good decisions about what mattered. And we had to say no to a ton of things because we simply didn't have time. When you only have 10 hours a week, you can't waste those 10 hours on things that doesn't matter. It's very apparent if you chose to build something that didn't matter and 2 weeks went by and you got nothing new interesting into the product. So that's one of the things we've been pushing a lot with Third Sim Signals, is the notion of embracing constraints. Don't try to escape all of those constraints that you might face, just as we had with 10 hours a week. It was actually a very good thing for us. It led to some very interesting thoughts on how we should structure the project. And Ruby on Rails is actually built on the same kinds of principles. Ruby on Rails has a lot of conventions. A lot of decisions were already made long before you even contemplate starting your project, and if you embrace those constraints and just go with that flow, you get a lot of things in return. So,
for people who want to follow along with what you're doing, I know you have a blog, and are there other places that they can go to keep up to date with what's happening in your life?
I have a personal blog at loudthinking.com. I haven't updated it too much just recently.
You've been on vacation.
Right, exactly. But I usually do. And also 37signals.com/SVN. That's where we keep the 37 Signals web blog, and we post about all our ideas and on web development and announce new products and so on and so forth. So those would be the two spots to reach what I'm working on right now.
Well, David, thank you for your time, and thank you for making programming fun again. I think a lot of people are doing stuff that they really didn't think they'd be doing at this stage in their lives, just because it is so much fun to work with Rails.
My pleasure indeed.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, David.
All right. Bye.
All right. Thanks. We're going to hang up, and we appreciate it. I'll let you know when this gets posted, probably Tuesday.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That is David Hanemeyer Hansen, who is Danish but speaks perfect English and is actually currently in Chicago, I think, although I think he also goes back to Denmark from time
to
time.
I think he's moved to Chicago as far as I know.
Okay.
It seems like he's been traveling all over the place. It's hard to keep track of him because he's quite a popular speaker these days.
Yeah, no wonder. He's really done a great job with Ruby on Rails and continues to do so. It's fun. I learned, you know, I'm not a programmer. When I was younger, I liked to do it as a hobby, and I do enjoy it. And I've been learning Ruby on Rails. I got the Agile Web Development with Ruby on Rails book, and it's just fun because you immediately get stuff running, and it's very satisfying to see something up and running and working so quickly. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, it's really great. And I mean, it really has helped with so many web apps to come on the market. And there's there's definitely some great applications out there. And I can't wait to see what 37 Signals does next.
They're really doing the neatest stuff with Ruby on Rails. Somebody asked, I got an email from a high school kid at the beginning of the summer saying, I got 6 weeks off. What should I do? like I know. But I told him, I said, get this book, go to this site. Download and install Ruby on Rails. Learn how to do it. In 6 weeks, you'll be able to do that. And actually, you'll be able to do it in 4 weeks and use the remaining 2 weeks to develop a site that's going to make you millions of dollars.
And then call us and we'll talk to him on
Inside
the Net.
It's that simple.
It's perfect.
So next week, we're going to talk to some folks who said we will never use Ruby on Rails. A wonderful, wonderful site for selling crafts. And in a couple of weeks, our first Inside the Net live from the Drake.
Very exciting.
That'll be a lot of fun. We're going to do that August 29th, I think. And in between then, I'm going on an Alaska cruise. But I think we'll have enough episodes in the bank to not miss one. So we apologize again for taking a week off. But we're just exhausted.
We're tired. So much to keep up with, so little time.
Thank you for joining us every Tuesday. Don't forget more information about Inside the Net and all the TWIT programming is available online at twit.tv. And Amber does a fantastic video podcast, of course, at commandn.tv, a must see. That comes out every Monday, right?
Yeah, every Monday.
And we do this little thing called Call for Help, a TV show seen in Canada and Australia. I hope you watch it if you can. If you can't, I hope you'll buy an episode or two for 99 cents. It's available on Google Video. Just go to callforhelptv.com and you'll find all of that there. I'm Leo Laporte for Amber MacArthur. We'll see you next time. Inside the Net.